This is A Coastal Story, written and presented by Charlie Connolly. In the record of parish burials for Kessingland on the Suffolk coast, there's a slightly more detailed entry than usual for the 27th of November, 1774. It reads, Adam Laurie, James Nisbet, Andrew Miller, John Laurie, his wife and four children, whose vessel, being wrecked, and they having escaped from the fury of the winds and waves, and being sheltered under the cliff, were, by the earth's falling on them, overwhelmed with a sudden and unexpected death on the 24th of November, 1774. When the storm came, it howled out of the northeast as if it had a point to prove. The North Sea seethed, mashing and boiling, white water surging over black, vicious fountains of spray, flinging into the darkness. There were hundreds of vessels in the waters off the east coast of Britain that day. Cargo ships, warships, customs cutters, fishing smacks, probably the odd gang of smugglers looking for a landing away from prying eyes. It was just a normal day on the sea, until that storm arrived. Some vessels simply vanished, along with the people on them, their names never recorded, their fate dawning on loved ones only gradually, by length of absence. Others at least had the dignity of being recorded. The cargo ship industry from Bowness, for example, carrying cargo and passengers, ran aground a few miles north of Aberdeen. As the wind shrieked through the rigging and tore at the sails, the groan of straining timber lost in the raging and crashing of the waves, the crew lowered the boat and helped the terrified passengers aboard. Barely half a dozen strokes of the oars away from the ship, a wave capsized them, pitching everyone into the sea. Only three bodies were recovered. The industry was smashed to kindling. In Edinburgh, they called it a perfect hurricane. Some compared it to the Great Storm of 1703. An account written in Newcastle said afterwards, "The whole coast, from this port to Berwick, exhibits a scene of the most total desolation, and such wreck of shipping as was never seen on this coast before." Bodies washed up all along the shore, including that of a woman with five diamond rings on her fingers and golden earrings in her ears, carried to the castle at Bamborough in Northumberland, opened as a temporary mortuary and shelter for survivors. Further south, the port of Harwich was described as looking like a forest, with 340 vessels huddled together seeking protection from the elements. There were wrecks off Margate, and reports of ships losing their anchors as far around the coast as Weymouth. The storm blew for nearly 3 days. Only then could the full extent of the damage and loss become clear, and the stories emerge. Across the country, people began to write. Correspondents dispatched letters to newspapers, determined to preserve or at least acknowledge the loss of so many people, so many vessels, so much devastation. It is impossible to say how many people died in that storm. Even the most rudimentary scientific weather forecasts were still almost a century away. Nobody knew it was coming, and it was upon them so quickly there was very little anyone could do about it. The Anne, a brig carrying cargo from London to its home port of Dunbar, was just one of the ships that had set out in decent conditions, only to sail right into the teeth of the storm. When it hit, the Anne was close enough to the Suffolk shore to do something about it. Everyone made it to the beach, but sometimes escaping the stormy sea is still not quite enough. Here's an extract from an account sent from Lowestoft to the Ipswich Journal on the day after the storm abated, dated 27th of November 1774. On the 24th, in the afternoon, the wind, which had in the preceding part of that day blown strong from the northeast, increased to a very violent gale, and continued from that time until Saturday night with very little abatement or variation. The damage it has done among the shipping on this coast is very great. Between Caister, near Yarmouth, and Kessingland, an extent of about 14 miles, there are at least 12 vessels on shore, many of which are entirely destroyed. The crews of all the vessels, except one, were saved. The fate of the unhappy crew that suffered was remarkably uncommon. The facts are as follows. On the 25th, early in the morning, a small Scots sloop was, by the violence of the gale, driven on shore about 5 miles to the southward of this place. The coast there is formed by a perpendicular cliff, about 50 feet in height. The soil of which it is composed is sand at the bottom, over which a considerable body of clay extends towards the summit. The foot of this cliff is continually washed by the sea in high tides, which gains here considerably. Many cavities are formed along the sandy foundation of this cliff by the continual beating of the sea, which are, when sufficiently undermined, instantaneously filled up by the slipping of the heavy soil from above. The vessel was stranded opposite to one of these cavities, into which 10 persons retreated to shelter themselves from the inclemency of the weather, while one of the seamen went to the assistance of the only man who now remained on board, and to get some clothes from the vessel. While he was thus employed, a considerable mass of the cliff slipped down upon the cave and on his companions, and involved them all in one general and instant destruction. Words are too weak to describe the horrors of this scene. The bodies of the unhappy sufferers have all been dug out of the cliff. The master, 4 seamen, a young woman, wife to one of the seamen, and 4 of their children. The eldest not quite 10 years old. The youngest not 2. The bodies were recovered thanks to the assistance of local people and were identified by the 2 surviving sailors. They were buried in the graveyard at St. Edmund's Church, the procession of coffins from the cliffs to the church, bringing everyone out onto the street. The silence of the occasion, in marked contrast to the terrible noise of the storm that was still fresh in people's ears. The coastal churchyards of Britain and Ireland are full of people who shouldn't really be there. People with no connection to the place where they lie. People who died at sea, their vessels wrecked, bodies tossed ashore, more often than not with nothing to identify them. Sometimes lucky enough to have a permanent memorial, but with nothing in their lives that tied them to that last resting place. Most remained unvisited, their families either too far away to travel, or just unaware. Of all those displaced dead, the passengers and crew of the Anne of Dunbar were unluckier than most. They'd escaped the storm, made it ashore, and found shelter. But for them, the storm had one particularly vicious trick up its sleeve. That was A Coastal Story. I'm Charlie Connolly. I'd like to thank listener Sarah Jordan for alerting me to the story of the Kessingland tragedy. Thanks a lot, Sarah. A quick recommendation for you. Some of you may know Miles Hunt, frontman and, well, heart and soul of the Wonder Stuff. Miles has always been a big supporter of Coastal Stories. In radio DJ parlance, a great friend of the show. And he has a new solo album coming down the pipe that I'd encourage you all to go and pre-order. It's called Things Can Change, it's out on October the 7th, and it promises to be an absolute doozy. I'll stick a link in the show notes. He's also touring solo in England in October and November, so do go and see him if he's rocking up anywhere near you. Milo is always worth turning out to see, with the band or just on his own. I'll also put a link to the tour dates in the show notes. Coastal Stories is researched, written, produced and presented by Charlie Connolly and listened to by you, the people listening. See you next time.